Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. The Idea Talks is a bi-weekly podcast with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. And I'm your co-host, Drew Pollinencia, and we are glad you're here. For more information on this podcast, visit ideanetwork.church. Welcome to this edition of the Idea Talks podcast. We have on our episode today a very special guest, Josh Hirschberger, all the way from Indiana. He's a pastor and a lawyer, has put out some really valuable information during this COVID crisis that we're dealing with right now. Currently, we're recording on April 13th of 2020. Most of the episodes we do on this podcast are fairly evergreen, meaning that people can tune in at any time and still get a lot of truths from it. And not saying that that's going to happen on this episode. However, the things that we'll be discussing today are very relevant for this specific time in 2020. So without any further ado, Josh, thanks for being on our podcast.
Oh, thanks for the invitation. Looking forward to the conversation about religious liberty. I've been following Josh Tice's posts on that and been very interested in what he has to say. And it's really an important moment, I believe, for the church. And it's a mixture of what should we do legally, ethically, biblically. And I think of Daniel and how God praised him for wisdom. God gave him wisdom, but then he was praised throughout the book and really throughout scripture for how he applied biblical truth to situations. And that's my prayer, certainly for me, because I don't always exhibit wisdom. You can ask my wife, I'm sure, about that. But then also the church generally. And that's really my prayer now, that we know what we should do, and then we can do it with courage.
So God has blessed me in life with friends. I have a few of them that are very smart friends. And Josh is one of my smart friends. So he is the kind of guy, literally this last week I had to call one of my smart friends about a theological issue that I had a question about. And I called him and I said, hey, we're planning on doing XYZ. And I think you think XYZ on this. And what are your thoughts on? And it really truly helped me. I think in your life, no matter what you do as a living, if you're a pastor, man, I love to have people in my life that are go-to intelligent individuals who have thought through issues from a biblical worldview. Josh Hirschberger, for me, is that in relation to religious liberty, in relation to church and legal issues, and a lot of areas. And we're really glad you're here today. This has been an interesting time as it relates to religious liberty and crisis. A lot of us follow men like Al Mohler, who are talking about these issues. A lot of us follow political talking heads. a lot of us love to see how politics interplays with the local church and church ministry. I guess we have just a few questions that we really want to talk about here, Josh, you and I, and that is, I'm going to preview. I don't normally do this, but I'm going to preview these four questions and then let's hit them one by one. Number one, do we believe that the church in America is under persecution? Number two, what are some concerning stories that have come into play during this time? Number three, what should we be looking for as it relates to infringement upon religious liberty? And then number four, when should the church reconvene? When do we actually start opening up our services for public worship once again? Again, this is recorded, as we said, on April 13th. This episode isn't going to be coming out until April 21st. So there might be some of these things that are already discussed further, but I do believe some of these main issues will be applicable. Josh, let's begin with that first question. What are your thoughts? Do you believe that the church in America is under persecution?
So this is going to sound like a really lawyer-like answer, but my answer is it depends. It depends. All right. So if you're looking at this from a Chinese perspective or an early church perspective, the answer is no. But if you follow the news, Chinese authorities have said that Chinese Christians can't even worship online. They can't even have online worship services. And of course, you know, some of these stories, they're developing and maybe that will have changed or maybe that will be unclear. But that certainly would be consistent with some of the things that the Chinese government has said to Christians. I mean, they're blowing up churches, all right, literally blowing them up. And now they're saying, look, you can't even meet in an online format. So that's certainly persecution. Certainly the early church that was persecuted, martyred for even holding underground church in a sense was persecution. So I'm just going to give you kind of my take on this, having been in this space for about a decade now. I don't think church leaders need me to tell them, be cautious of the government. I think that most of us have grown up in the context of what we might call the culture wars. And then we have seen instances of government overreach. So my basic response to this is I think advanced modernity's most effective attack against Christianity and against the church is not against its truth, but rather its necessity. And let me try to explain that. Its attack is not against truth, but rather against the necessity of the church. And so oftentimes I'll say, look, I'm not sure that this government official is being hostile to Christianity, but I am certain that they're indifferent to Christianity. Mm. I remember one case in which I was representing an individual that was Mennonite. And most of my activity in the case was trying to explain to the prosecutor in that case the religious principles of my client. We were successful in that case, and my wife has ever since then told me I should advertise on the side of Amish buggies. Right? So Hirschberger Law Office. That's going great. Down the road.
That'd be fantastic.
The lawyer for the Mennonites.
Yes. Right next to the triangle, the orange triangle. So
yes, you can put your face in the orange triangle. That'd be great.
So my former law partners asked me from time to time about my flourishing Amish criminal defense practice.
That's fantastic.
Anybody listening, this is a little bit later at night, and Josh has already chastened me about my lawyer jokes. Don't use the same ones.
Josh, seriously, let me just say, if you're afraid that Amish people are listening to this podcast, I'm not sure that you understand the Amish.
Fair enough.
They're probably not fans.
Well played.
I wasn't apologizing to the Amish. I was apologizing for my jokes.
Oh, I apologize. We all apologize for your jokes. I'll tell you that. Okay. No, but in general, I think we're in agreement. I think it's a huge stretch for any pastor, and you need to be able to speak your own mind. We do have the freedom of speech currently. That was a joke. We currently can say whatever we want, right? So you say whatever you want. I think it's a stretch for the American Christian to say we're under some kind of persecution. Complete agreement with that. I think that's very wrong. However, I would say rhetoric matters. And the type of rhetoric we've seen is disconcerting. One of the things that I'm pushing back on personally in my life and in my ministry and in my setting is the type of rhetoric that's being used by our governor and by the governors around the country that is inappropriate rhetoric to use. And I've had people say to me, even within our own church congregation, it's just words. And I'll say, exactly. So I want to be able to say my words back. And here's why. Because rhetoric produces public opinion. Public opinion produces policy, and policy becomes law. And so when strong rhetoric like we will shut down the church permanently, or you cannot and will not, and we'll talk about drive-in services in a moment. When that rhetoric comes up, if it's not, in my opinion, I'd like your thoughts because we haven't talked about this offline. If that rhetoric is not smacked up against another rhetoric, then that rhetoric just continues to flow. Nobody ever wants to, everybody knows if you go to Central Europe in the 1930s, you've escalated the conversation way too far, right? But the problem of the early 1930s in Central Europe was rhetoric. It was just statement after statement after statement that was said without anybody pushing back or very few people pushing back. And so what are your thoughts on that?
Well, Josh, I couldn't agree more. And I'm very thankful that you came out on social media calling out Governor Solaric for his statements. I often will mention James Madison's description of rights because we think of the First Amendment. I'd say this to church audiences all the time. We think about the First Amendment as a concrete barrier, like nothing's getting through this thing. But James Madison, one of the architects of the Constitution, called them parchment barriers. Parchment barriers. So something that can be faded, torn, shredded very easily. And just like you said, if something is said about church and there is no response from church leaders, it's something like, I often use the Fifth Amendment example. If you're in a jury trial and somebody's charged with a crime, even if the judge tells the jury, look, you cannot consider his silence, this person's silence, as evidence of their guilt. But what do most people do? If somebody says, you're guilty, and nothing is said in response, what do most people assume?
They're guilty.
You're guilty. And back to what I said, that one of the greatest attacks of our times against the church is against its necessity. Well, what is the language being used about the church? Non-essential. It is a non-essential service. It is a relic of our religious past. It has no bearing on our enlightened and advanced age. So I think you're absolutely right that, you know, is this outright persecution like China? No. However, it is evidence of an increasing secularization in our country in which many government officials don't see the value of the church. And they don't understand the importance of religious worship, like you talked about today, some assembly required. The church has historically met. That is a key part of our faith. And government officials shouldn't just ramrod over that without understanding what's going on. But like you said, if the pastors don't step up and say something, then everybody's going to just think, oh, this isn't a problem. So yeah, I couldn't agree more. And that's really where I land on the question of persecution, why I say it depends. No, we're not being kicked out of our churches. They're not being blown up. We're not being prohibited from meeting online. But you see the imprecision of language and you see more secular officials simply acting like the church doesn't matter. And that, I think, is the greatest danger and in a sense is persecution of the church and would certainly be contrary to the vision of the founders when they set out the First Amendment. So yeah, I couldn't agree more and I'm very thankful that you stepped up and said something about that.
Well, I think it's great, and I think it's fascinating. I think we'll see a rise of that over the next days and the next weeks, which is encouraging. And I think we'll get through this when this podcast episode comes out. Maybe not. Maybe Josh and I will be in prison, and you'll know for sure it was persecution.
It was my jokes, one of the two.
If your jokes get us in prison, I'll testify against them. I will say we deserve it, sir, Your Honor. We really do. Okay, so with that being stated. It's not just rhetoric. There have been some actions taken by sheriffs, by police, by judges, and by governors, mayors. What are some of these stories that truly should be disconcerting to religious leaders?
Right. So similar to what you published, Josh, I have encouraged church leaders to date to temporarily, and that's an important word, temporarily cancel or postpone in-person services to help slow the spread of this virus. I think that's being a good citizen. It's being a good neighbor. And all the health officials are talking about how that can spread it. But one of the big issues that blew up over the last week is this issue of drive-in services. And as a federal judge has now pointed out, people can drive through McDonald's. They can sit in a Lowe's parking lot. They can go by Walmart parking lot. And there were these prohibitions against churches just having a drive-in service so that people could gather. Windows are rolled up. There's nothing being exchanged. And so there were several churches in Mississippi where a mayor fined the people that came to the drive-in service $500 a piece. Now, litigation has already been filed against that municipality. Another issue was in Louisville, and this was over just the last couple of days. In fact, I was on the phone Friday night with a pastor in Louisville that was wrestling with, do I challenge this? Do I want to make my Easter service all about police cars and all this stuff? But in Louisville, Mayor Fisher basically said, look, you can't participate in Easter. And the federal judge that took a look at this thought, well, I never expected to hear an American mayor say that unless it was in a dystopian novel or in The Onion, a satirical publication. And I mean, he says this from the bench. So essentially drive-in services were canceled in the city of Louisville. Fortunately, a federal judge on Saturday, Judge Walker, overruled that, issued an injunction against that practice. I also read a little bit over the weekend how there were some tacks that were laid in a parking lot to prevent drive-in services. Now, I'm not saying a government did that. I'm not sure who did it, but that's concerning. And then, of course, you do have a few pastors who have said, I still want to meet. And they're saying, look, if a business like a grocery store can socially distance, why can't I do the same in my church? Now, I have not encouraged those claims, nor have major religious defense firms around the country pursued those claims yet. I could get into some of the legalities, but essentially the government would look, the courts would look at two things. What is the government's compelling interest? And then is that the government's action narrowly tailored to accomplish that purpose or interest? And right now, because the compelling interest, you know, stopping a pandemic is so high, many attorneys are concerned about, is that the right challenge at the right time? Thus far, I've thought not the right challenge at the right time. That could change in the future. One other issue that was mentioned, we're talking some about Albert Mueller or Al Mueller. He was talking about a prohibition in Mendocino County out in California, yeah, coming from a health department, saying that you couldn't do singing. You couldn't have any singing on a live stream. And again, we're having a little bit of a lighthearted time. I pulled this one paragraph because if you know Al Mueller, most of the time in a bow tie, an incredible mind, academic, he says, Martin Luther once commented that singing the great hymns of the faith would drive the devil to distraction. The Mendocino County Health Department order would have been beyond Luther's imagination, and he would have responded with language that this Baptist cannot employ. Yeah. I don't know if you caught that.
I did. I listened to it by way of podcast. Not, I didn't read it, but okay. Brilliant mind. He really is. And Al Mueller was saying, I mean, can you believe this? Literally, they're saying, well, if you have six or seven people in a room and they're singing, they're going to be spreading their germs. And so we're going to be spreading the virus. So let's clamp down on that as well. That's the argument essentially from that county, right, from what I understand.
Well, and notice this came from a health department. We had a similar issue in Indiana that prohibited even live streaming services. And fortunately, our attorney general stepped in and said, no, you can't do that. And so I think in some cases, you have health professionals that are acting in an abundance of caution. I think you used that phrase today, Josh. But if you followed their dictates, we might never get back to normal life. And so sometimes legal authorities have to step in and say, actually, no, that's not the right standard. So again, you can't sing on a live stream. You get fined $500 for parking at a drive-in service. And then, of course, the big one that I haven't mentioned yet is the church in Kentucky that was having an in-person service. And the police came in, took license plate numbers down, and then said that anyone that showed up was to be quarantined for 14 days. And so those are these stories that we're hearing, and those are developing around the country.
To be very clear, both Josh, Drew, and I believe that it is extremely important to heed the counsel of the scientific community, yeah, of our government leaders, and of our very passionate media to limit our public gatherings for the sake of lowering the curve and allowing this virus to essentially go away, we hope. We'll see what happens over the next week. And we've canceled our services. We have not met for the last five Sundays. We won't be meeting for, we have no plans. They're canceled indefinitely. This is important. Now that we're on the side of the virus and we're wondering where things are going, we begin to analyze everything that's happened over the last few weeks. And I've begun to analyze this comment out of an abundance of caution. And really, out of an abundance of caution, I'm getting very weary of this and leery of this phrase. And I'll tell you why. I'm going to talk about this on Sunday a little bit to our church. I normally don't get political, but I don't believe this is a political issue. I'm concerned for our country's fear at the level of anxiety where we're at. Out of an abundance of caution, I could make the argument that our nation, let alone the world, has made some of the biggest mistakes and civil rights violations we've ever seen. Out of an abundance of caution, during World War II, we looked around our country and said, boy, our Japanese neighbors really make us nervous. And out of an abundance of caution, because we want to make sure they could be Japanese agents, let's round up those families and let's put them in internment camps. Not because they're bad, out of an abundance of caution. We just got to make sure they're safe. I mean, we're scared. We're really, really scared. And so we took families, and we put them in camps. This is not Nazi camps. These are American camps. Look it up. You know it. Japanese internment camps. On Americans, why are we doing this? Out of an abundance of caution. Out of an abundance of caution during the civil rights movement, what did we do? We were really nervous that these white children and these black children could be together. I mean, segregating might be best for everybody. I think there were absolute racist politicians and racist people. But I wonder how many people just, they didn't hate the other races. They just, out of an abundance of caution, it's probably best for everybody to separate. And fear is such a dangerous motivator. And in no way, like I said, we've canceled our services. We need to be very cautious. But out of an abundance of caution, I wonder if we've allowed a lot of public policy throughout our history, and that's just two examples in the last 70 years, that have led to some very dangerous breaking of the social contract in America about liberty versus freedom, or excuse me, liberty versus safety. What are your thoughts on that? Am I going the right direction, or I need to be careful there?
No, I think you are going the right direction. Again, the issue is the government's compelling interest in stopping a pandemic. And because this is so new, I mean, we're really only a couple of weeks into it. I think government officials are afraid to be that guy or that girl, in a sense that I opened up my state too early or I was too late to close it down. And you can already see that there's an article going around about how Andy Beshear from Kentucky shut down and Governor, I think, Lee from Tennessee didn't, and the fact that there are more cases there. And so I think government officials are leery to be the first one to step out and say something. But I would mention even what we did with the Mormons as another example of how the United States has reacted to strange new ideas or to civic danger. So, you know, what do you do with that fear? I think we have to have clear heads and we need to encourage our government officials to lead and to lead sacrificially and for what, not just for themselves, but for the people that they serve. Mm. I mentioned that I was on a call with U.S. Senator Todd Young today. And I always try to start meetings with elected officials with some scripture. And so one of the verses we talked about was John 10:11, where Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd, who's a leader. And he goes on to say, the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And so he serves in a sacrificial way. We also talked about Nehemiah. And Nehemiah's constant prayer as he built a wall in 52 days to defend from danger, not from a virus, but from enemies, was God strengthen my hands. And that's what we prayed with Senator Young today about. May God give you wisdom and strength to make these tough decisions. So what we should be looking for when we think about fear as church leaders, I mean, churches are going to have to make a similar decision, right? You know, governors are going to have to make a decision whether to open their state back up. Church leaders are going to have to make the decision when to open the church doors back up. And church leaders could be slighted in the same way that governors could.
Oh, yeah.
So I do think, you know, again, back to wisdom and courage, you know, wisdom to know exactly when that right moment is. But I'm thankful you're sounding the alarm that, look, this could go the wrong way. And then perhaps in some ways it already has. And so we need to call our public officials to account.
So let's talk about the elephant in the room question. It's the one that everybody wants to know, right? We said, Josh keeps referencing an article that I put out last week entitled Church, Some Assembly Required, where basically we're stating if the government in perpetuity, theoretically, we believe the government's going to allow churches to meet, and we know this. But if theoretically they did not, at what point does the church say, thank you very much, but the church has to assemble? I guess the question is, when does the church reconvene? And I know that there are many answers to that. On one side, it would be as soon as the president, governor, and mayor all give permission. The other side is it should have never stopped in the first place. You're crazy for ever canceling it. So I know this is opinion-based, but what would you say in regards to that question? When does the church reconvene?
So I don't have a specific date, but I do have a set of circumstances that I think we should be looking for. All right. And so I kind of give you a couple steps. This is just kind of how I think. So agree with it, don't agree with it. I don't always even agree with myself. So you can take that
with a grain
of salt. So first of all, I would say, you know, stay vigilant in the moment. And you're doing exactly that. You're asking this hard question. You know, are we jeopardizing religious liberty for safety? And that's a really tough question. Right now, my position is we have reserved our rights. I don't think the government has the authority to close us down. However, given current case law and public relations, I religious liberty is already under assault. And I don't want this to be the case that goes forward right now. I think it would set a bad precedent.
That's wise.
I was going to, just so the church leaders understand, again, strong First Amendment person, but I do have to look at the case law and say, look, religious liberty under the case law is not unlimited. And the classic example of that is you can't go out and sacrifice your kid to Satan, right? That is not a right that is protected, nor should it be under the U.S. Constitution.
By the way, we're all in agreement on that. Yeah. So.
Yeah, good. Okay. I thought there would be some tough pushback on that issue, but all right. So the issue, and I was sitting in a Sixth Circuit argument in Cincinnati, religious liberty issue. And sure enough, the Pastafarians were brought up, and I'm just giving you some context here in religious liberty litigation. The Pastafarians come up all the time. If you're not familiar with them, it is worth a Google. These people believe that as part of their religious rituals, they must wear pasta strainers on their heads in government-issued IDs. All right, they are a part of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. No joke. Which was originally
This is a joke.
Italian roots, or like what's the deal there? Like
they have a band called Italian Roots.
They were inspired by pirates.
They have a band called Italian Roots. No. That's what they. Yeah. I'm sorry. This is real. Oh my word.
And they were inspired by pirates. They may have been Italian pirates, but I'm not sure about that. And so they literally claim that as part of their worship of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, they must wear a pasta strainer on their head. And so many times when religious liberty claims are brought up specifically about human sexuality, and what the Bible says about human sexuality, you know it's not going well when one of the judges brings up the Pastafarians and they equate our religious liberty claims to that.
Wow.
I'll give you one more example. As you can imagine, those claims are quite strained when it comes to the courts. Another example is the First Church of Cannabis here in the state of Indiana. And they claim as a part of their religious rights, the right to smoke marijuana, which is still criminally banned in the state of Indiana. And they tell me that they have a very high form of worship. And that was...
Oh, no. Okay, yep, that's fine.
Comedic relief. I love this.
Yes, I told you the jokes would not be getting any better.
Listen, everybody who knows Josh Hirschberger within the Idea Network knew these things were coming. Yeah. So just please continue. We're ready.
Has the whole episode been a lead up to this
moment? We're prepared.
It has been.
If you're watching this, if you're watching this and not listening to this, you can just see the giddiness of our friend as he moves forward. Keep going, please.
Hey, I had to sit through an hour and a half zoning hearing, which we were successful in. So I'm sorry that I'm taking that out on you guys, but
it's fine.
So number one, you know, stay vigilant in the moment. And all kidding aside, it's right to answer these tough questions, or right to ask these tough questions. And where are things going? Number two, I would say would be petition your Melzar. And I'm a recovering alliterator, as I think some of the network might be. But Melzar was the official in Daniel chapter number one that Daniel petitioned when he said, look, I can't eat the king's meat. I can't in good conscience eat the king's meat. Well, did he go on his version of social media and kick and scream and yell? No, he went to Melzar, who he had a previous relationship with, and quietly asked for an accommodation. So certainly we should speak up about issues when it's time to speak up. But something I've been talking about for a long time is it's much better if you've met with your officials, you know them, you've served with them, you're seeking the common good alongside them, and then you say, hey, by the way, as your brother often says, I'm the Jesus person, all right? So everything that I do, I'm a Jesus person. So petition your Melzar. So the first one was stay vigilant. You need to be thinking about these things. Number two, go ahead, reach out to your elected officials. Maybe that's a state rep. Maybe it's a congressman. Maybe it's your governor's office. Ask how you can serve and help. And I love what Southern Hills has been doing with the blood drive and other efforts to meet community needs. Tell them what you're doing, but then go ahead and tee up this issue with them and say, look, we want to serve. We want to be good citizens, but we're concerned about what happens in the next couple of weeks.
You know,
and so would you help us track that?
You bring up a fantastic point, and it's something my brother and I have talked about recently as well. So my predilection is to blow it up and to make a big deal, you know, right? And my brother said, well, why don't we together get with the other pastors and write a letter to the governor and write a letter to all the government officials that I've spent the last 5 years developing relationships with and petition them in this way, rather than going on and, like you said, crying on social media. And I think, well, yeah, but that takes work and effort but no, I do. I think, Josh, in times like this, I honestly think of the conversations that Samuel Adams must have had with John Adams, as Samuel Adams was out there fussing in the street, and John Adams was like, you know what, we hold on, let's hold back, and let's see if we can take this one step at a time. But I do think what you're saying is exactly right, and that is the step. So first of all, you're saying what we need to do is have these questions. It's right to have these questions. Secondly, petition, just like Daniel did. And what's next?
And so to finish that up, I would just mention that when you respectfully request an accommodation from the government, sometimes they'll give it to you. For example, in Indiana, there were churches that were concerned about drive-in services. They contacted the governor's office. He addressed it and said, yes, you can do that. Iowa, the same. Now, Nevada is a different story. And Louisville, Kentucky was a different story. And someone mentioned in one of my articles, well, you do know that Daniel did that the next time and got thrown to the lions. And notice, Daniel did the same thing. It was the government official's response that was different. And that's out of our control. And so there may come a point where if a pastor feels in good conscience, this is something I should be doing, some assembly required, then maybe it's time to retain counsel and to pursue legal remedies. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that or you shouldn't go on social media. I think, like we've talked about, it's important to make these statements, but I'm just encouraging that to be a part of it. The third one I would say would be to watch the medical and business community. We talked about, you know, stay vigilant in the moment, petition your MELSAR, and then watch the medical and business community. Why? The CDC and the other medical officials are the ones that are informing the politicians about when our economy should open back up. Now, I mentioned business as well, because again, if you talk to a doctor, they're going to want to keep us locked up for forever just to make sure nobody dies. And I appreciate that. But the business leaders in our churches, in our communities, don't want this to go on any longer than it has to.
That's right.
And so when I talked about that compelling interest, what is the government's compelling interest? It is to stop the pandemic. Well, when the medical officials and the business officials say, look, this is going down, that's when we as church leaders need to step forward and say, hey, it's time to open our churches back up. If you haven't read the Nine Marks article about how the church responded to the influenza epidemic in 1918, I encourage you, just take a few minutes and read it. It has newspaper clippings, and this is exactly what the church did in D.C. during that epidemic. At first, they closed it. Then, this is really interesting, some of the pastors then moved to outdoor services because the order only said they couldn't meet inside. And so it's just like our drive-in service thing.
Wow.
And then the health officials said, you can't, it's all about people meeting together. So there were some entrepreneurial pastors out there like, hey, we're going to meet outside. And then after a time, when the deaths and the infections started to drop, the health department said, hey guys, you need to stay closed down. And the church leaders said, no, we're going to open back up. And if you want to come arrest us, then fine, do that. But you don't have enough compelling medical evidence to keep us shut down any longer. And so I think we can look to the church's example in 1918 as we move forward. So again, watch the medical community, watch the business community. If there comes a point where they have opened up businesses again, more generally, I think that's a perfect moment for the church to step forward and make a claim. So those would be my thoughts, just as church leaders are looking at this issue, trying to figure out what is wisdom in this moment.
That's good. I think about, you know, the quote that talks about the only thing that evil needs to triumph is for good men to keep silent. And I think this is our moment, you know, verbally as well as in the right Christ-like way. But to your point, like if we opened up and the community is necessarily not ready for it either, like nobody might show up to our demonstration, you know. But I'll definitely take a look at that article. Thanks for sharing that for sure. I think that's going to provide some great insight on what, you know, those who have gone before us, and we're carrying on. This is our moments in history to keep the moment of faith alive and pass it on to the next generation. So thanks for that.
Yeah, I think what you said is absolutely helpful. This is one of the things I love about the network itself and what it's become, an extension of friends who genuinely, brothers and sisters, who genuinely care about each other, who genuinely want what's best for one another. But we think differently, and we all have different skill sets. And I don't know if I could think of a metaphor like a body, right, with different body parts. That's biblical or something, right, where we can actually help one another in these moments. And seriously, Josh, you've been that for me. You've been that for our church. And look, dude, for real, you've been that for a lot of churches over the last couple weeks with everything that you wrote and did in relation to the CARES Act. That, Josh, that was so extremely helpful. Literally, your article came up in my own deacon meeting, and one of our deacons like, have you seen these articles by this man, Josh Hirschberger? And it was compared with this article from this organization, that organization, and everything else. So it's just extremely helpful what you've done, and we genuinely appreciate how you've been speaking into the church. And I hear you, and I listen to you, and I want to take your counsel throughout this. So thank you so much.
I appreciate that, Josh, and it means a lot. And I look at it the same way. It's the beauty of the body of Christ, and we won't make any guesses as to who is which body part at this point. But as we are able to serve the church in our wheelhouse, I think that's what we're called to do. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Any last words for our audience before we wrap up this episode?
So Kylie is so persuasive. She's always talking about bring resources to your talks. So I brought a couple resources.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So just a couple thoughts. And I think this is a moment for us to kind of look at citizenship and really think about what's our proper role. I mean, we're being kind of thrown into the cauldron of this thing. So as you're thinking about this, a great book I recently read by Bruce Riley Ashford called Letters to the American Christian, written in a very conversational style about church and state, public theology, as well as some key issues. Also, Free to Believe by Luke Goodrich, who's part of the Beckett Fund, litigated successfully at the U.S. Supreme Court several times. This was a Gospel Coalition Book of the Year last year, and explains in pretty simple terms, what does religious liberty look like? When should we say something? And by the way, Luke has also said, now's not the time, you know, just wait. And then this is a kind of a shameless plug, but this is the Bold Church Strategy, Serving Our Way Back to the Center of the City, that I wrote really trying to think about these things. And right now in a crisis, we see the importance of religious freedom, and we see the importance of being engaged in government. You think about, what if there was a different person sitting in Judge Walker's seat? What if that decision went against us? Well, that judge was appointed by a president that was elected by people that voted. And as you know, Josh, we've talked about this on a podcast episode before, I'm not a fan of political punditry from the pulpit, but I do look, I think perhaps our best biblical examples are the Old Testament characters like Daniel and Esther and Nehemiah that were faithful followers of Jehovah, but engaged in foreign governments. I think that's perhaps our best example in this. So it's important to be engaged. And that doesn't mean you have to rant and rave, but I've been so encouraged, Josh, by you stepping up. I know that there are probably some in your church that don't agree with your stances on some of these issues. But like you said, it's not political. It's biblical. And we shouldn't allow the world to tell us what's biblical or not. And so I often say the best way to defend religious freedom is to use it. And now is certainly that time to get back out, connect with your elected officials, and stay vigilant. I think right now it's a time for vigilance, but not defiance. Last thing I'll mention, for those that are concerned about this, just so you know, kind of the industry, the religious defense, and that's not, I'm not trying to denigrate it at all, but if your church is acting in good faith and you've really wrestled with these questions, but you think, hey, I need to take a stand, then there's literally an army of Christian attorneys around the country that are ready and willing to come to your aid. I sometimes refer to them as ambulance chasers, but with halos. And so they're ready to come to your defense. And so I'm grateful for religious freedom. I think it's a time to stand up and say something, but it's also a time to use great wisdom so that we don't damage our church's gospel witness in kind of a foolhardy stand for religious freedom.
It's going to take a lot of personal time with God, where you, pastor, are leading your congregation, your ministry, as God leads you. And Josh, what you said right there is, I think, a huge offer and statement that is, there are many attorneys that will stand for religious liberty and are looking to help. And we don't know. We don't, it, right now, like we said, this is April 13th. When this comes out, it'll be April 21st. We don't know. We could be on the down decline of this. This is headed to openness. Everybody's like, oh, thank goodness, just a couple more weeks and we're done. Or it could be ramping up. And you may need to seek counsel. And we want to encourage you to do so. That is a an American right, and there are people that can help you. And if you need help with that, contact Josh Hirschberger, contact myself, and we will help direct you to the right people.
Well, thanks for this opportunity to jump on in this issue, and I'll be praying for wisdom, certainly for myself, but also for you and other church leaders in this time.
Thanks so much for listening to today's Idea Talks. If you would like to reach out to us, drop us an email at joshtice@ideanetwork.church. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.